Like, if you go, if you saw Beyonce in concert and she's like, I'm gonna try some new stuff for you, you'd be like, like, what? Do single ladies, you know? Whereas for a comedian, you need new material all the time. Like, you can't go on stage and go, oh, you want to hear one of the classics? You've seen this on Instagram.
Welcome to Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff, where we interview newsmakers, storytellers, and all-around interesting people. Sit back, relax, unless you're driving, and enjoy the show. Here's Jackson.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Jackson Huff. This is Not in a Huff. Thanks so much for joining me. As always, really appreciate it. This week, speaking with Amanda Sadaka. Now, in the past, I've talked to comedians. Always have a great time just learning about the world of stand-up comedy, about how they get their start, how they realized they were funny to begin with. And that's exactly what we're going to do with Amanda. I've got several other comics lined up. This is the kind of the first one in a series that's going to be I guess coming out relatively soon of dabbling in some comics along with, you know, all the other types of guests that that we have on. But Amanda's really, really awesome. Really enjoy speaking with her. She comes to it from a unique perspective in two ways. One way is that she actually had some significant health problems that's kind of shaped her comedy, and she speaks about it on stage. I think she had ulcerative colitis, and she wound up having to have a part of her colon removed. I think maybe the whole thing. She's going to talk about that. It's been a little while since I spoke with her, so you're going to have to listen to the details from Amanda, which is probably for the best, anyways. But she had a colostomy bag that has since been reversed. But talking about just that as a young person, you know, I think she was either in college or fresh out of college during that time. So it's definitely something that, you know, she had to get used to. She'll talk about what a colostomy bag is if you don't already know. But I think you're going to enjoy listening to her perspective and how she was able to kind of laugh at that and make it funny and accept that for sure. The other way that she comes at things, I said uniquely, but maybe not so uniquely, is that she comes from a showbiz family. She kind of gets it honestly. I think it's funny what she says about how she learned she was funny and what her family thought of her prior to that. It's pretty funny there. But as far as the showbiz family, her grandfather, if you know past famous singers, and there's not a lot of Sadakas out there, so I think you probably, if you know her grandfather, you would know it. But I believe her grandfather is Neil Sadaka, which you can check him out. But we're talking to Amanda today, and all about her. So we didn't really touch on that, just because she's doing so much amazing stuff. There's no need to talk about anybody else, but definitely, I'm sure shaped her of who she is and how she's developed her stage presence as well. Without all this talking, we're gonna wrap it up. Just saying, of course, if you haven't already followed it along, check out all those other past podcasts. Go follow along on Apple and on Spotify. I now have a YouTube channel. I was waiting forever. I was not wanting to create the YouTube channel because I don't necessarily want to have to put out the video. That's even more editing for people to do. So my platform now, you can just put it on YouTube. It's not a video, but it is on YouTube if that's an easier way for people to listen to it. It's kind of a nice little graphic, a photo, and some, you know, some sound lines. But go follow along on YouTube. I appreciate that very much. On Instagram, on TikTok, on YouTube, Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff is where you're going to find it. Go leave a 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. That helps a ton. Leave a written review on either one or both. That helps too. Without further ado, I already talked forever when I said I wasn't going to. Here's Amanda Sadaka. Ms. Sadaka, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm good. Hardest question of the whole evening. Just introduce yourself.
I'm Amanda Sadaka. I'm a stand-up comedian in LA. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
I like it. I we're going to we're gonna dig deeper because there is a lot more to you than you're letting on. But we're going to kind of start right where you mentioned you're in LA. You're from LA. That's not super common. That's a place that a lot of people move to, and there's not a lot of native LA. What is it? Saint? What is it? Los Angeles? Or how do you even call you guys?
That's a great question. I think Los Angeles.
Angelinos.
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 That
There
sounds
we
right.
go. All right. Well, if you want any other things about LA, I'll let you know. All right. No. So yeah, growing up there, native, and then also, your last name is relatively famous as well. So just let's talk about just growing up in LA.
Yeah, growing up in LA, I always actually hated growing up in LA. Most of the reasons were just random casualties of LA, were like the traffic, the weather, typical complaints. But it wasn't until I graduated college and moved back to LA, and that's when I sort of started finding the best in it and all the stuff that I really wanted to be doing, and started doing stand up, which LA is incredible for. Started doing acting, also incredible for. So I feel like I only really found my place here very recently, whereas growing up here, all I wanted was to get out of LA.
Yeah, and I saw somewhere that the college you went to, I'm not super familiar with that college. I don't even remember what it was right now, but I know you just said that you left LA and then you came back. So was it going from LA to, some little town in Kansas, or where's the college at?
Yeah, I went to school in upstate New York, Hamilton College, Roll Continentals.
All
Um,
right.
it was, yeah, it was great there. And I did do a lot of comedy stuff within the school. I ran our satire paper and the improv group I was a part of. So I really got involved in comedy there and then sort of graduated. And it was like there were so many opportunities to further explore. But the school itself, total middle of nowhere, two planes to get to. But great school, loved it.
Yeah, and when you say you were trying to get away from LA, you'd went about as far as humanly possible in the US.
Oh, totally. Because since I grew up in LA, I've always grown up sort of in a city. So I was really for college, because I love being in a city, but for college specifically, I was like, I want to live in a bubble. I want completely. And that's what I had, which was great.
I know that you started stand up relatively recently, and we're going to talk about that. But what was you grew up in LA. We've already mentioned that. So what was your first foray into entertainment? Was it just this past summer? Did you do things before that? What'd that look like?
Yeah, I've always been interested in entertainment. I've done a lot of acting things, mostly in school plays and stuff. And once I graduated, I was moving home to LA, which I wasn't too thrilled about. But to sort of make the best out of it, I wanted to do more acting, which I've been doing since high school. I was doing plays there. So I started doing auditions on Backstage, which is actually where I saw a stand-up audition, which I just did on a whim. And then the stand-up, I just sort of kept going with it, kept writing, kept doing it. But mostly acting is the stem.
And you decided to go into stand up when, because being funny and being able to do stand up is two different things. When did you figure out, I guess, that you were funny? I don't, if you figure that out yet, I don't know, but when did you figure that out?
It's actually kind of funny because there was a very specific moment, actually, because I was terribly unfunny. I was actually like really, really annoying as a kid, which isn't me just being like, I was so annoying. It's like everyone in my family is like, yeah, you were a real, real irritating, like very not funny. And
Huh.
then we were in the car one day and I just made a like good joke and everyone sort of stopped and went, wait, that was really good. And then I started not being annoying and being funny instead, which also kind of goes hand in hand. I feel like all funny people are also kind of annoying, but yeah, I remember it was a very, very, very specific moment that sort of flipped.
That flipped is comp or the switch just completely flipped, and you were no longer annoying it, but it was funny instead.
Yeah, I remember what was it? The line that I said, it was, everyone's a winner when you win.
All right, yeah.
I didn't even understand what I was saying, but everyone was like, that's good.
All right.
Yeah.
I like it. All right. I feel like I would have like a little bit of a crisis if everyone, if people said, you were very, very annoying as a child, but I'm glad that it flipped at some point, right? They're not saying, and you're still kind of annoying.
Exactly. And then I also got really into in high school comedy writing, where I started like a sort of satire section of our school newspaper, which is what got me into the comedy writing side, which I brought into college, which then, because then post graduation, I was doing acting and then also writing. So those sort of melded into stand up, I guess.
I like it. Well, we've learned a little bit about Amanda as a I guess an annoying child, but we've learned a little bit about Amanda as a child. Before we get to the adult, let's learn a little bit more about Amanda. That's a little bit of goofy things in a game that I like to play called Rapid Fire. Generally, no follow up. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so it's going to be a series of 9 questions that I have relatively strong opinions about myself, but generally I try not to follow up anything that you say. So here we go. All right. You're in a hurry. What is your go-to fast food order?
Oh, McDonald's Happy Meal with the like chicken nuggets, extra fries instead of fruit, and 2 things of ranch and a Sprite.
Right. All right. You only have $3 to spend. What are you spending it on?
Probably like some sort of snack, bag of chips.
Dogs or cats?
That's hard because I was dogs my whole life, but then I found a cat last year and now she's like my child. So I feel like overall dogs, but now I'm both.
All right. I'll allow it. Socks with sandals. Is that acceptable or no?
No.
What's one place you've never been but always wanted to visit?
Australia. Australia would be really cool.
What's the most used app on your phone?
Probably TikTok,
We're going to kind of, next 2 questions are about music. What's one song? It's a banger. It always gets you pumped no matter when you hear it.
Oh, I really like, I forget who it's by, but it's called Wendy. She's topsy turvy. Like, it's good. It's a good song. Look up
Is it
Topsy Turvy Wendy, and maybe
old or is it new?
it's new. Who's it by? It's a really great song. Every time it comes on, I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Let me see. Who's Wendy by? It's great. It's Wendy by.
Is it windy like with an E, like a name, or with an I like the weather?
It's Wendy like the name, and it's. I think it's a recent song. I don't even know how I heard it. It's Wendy by Sid Simmons. Great song. Highly recommend.
All right, I have to check it out. On the flip side, what's one song that you hear and it just makes you scoff and want to change the channel?
Trying to think. Anything where like the singer's a little whiny. If they get too whiny, I get like a little bit like, okay.
But you're not going to single one specific song out.
I'm trying to think of a specific. I can't think of a specific. I mean, I want to say, no, I can't think of a specific song.
That's all right. That's all right. What's one thing you have that you really should throw away?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably just like old makeup. I feel like I still have makeup that's like definitely really expired and dangerous, but still works, so.
All right. That's the end of rapid fire. You didn't answer a couple of the questions, but we'll let it slide. Yeah, let's kind of talk about, let's get more into your stand up. It's kind of a common thing out there with comedians that, those who kind of had everything perfect, hunky dory, peachy happen to them aren't always, oh, I mean, sometimes there's exceptions, but aren't the best comics. It's the ones that's had some hardships happen. That's that kind of is what inspires their comedy, and they can grow on that. I know some of the things that's happened to you has been relatively recent. Let's talk a little bit about I think it kind of the beginning of 2025, things started turning a little bit south.
Yeah, I actually, it was January 1st, 2025. So right at the start of the new year, I actually went into the hospital because I had for since I was 16 ulcerative colitis, which is basically my colon doesn't really work that well. But I went into the hospital because it got really bad, and I stayed there for 3 weeks, and then it ended up with me getting my colon removed, and I got a colostomy bag, which I was not pleased with. But I sort of find a lot of inspiration, specifically for comedy, from sort of tragedy, I guess. So this year I've had four surgeries, which each one kind of put a stop to things, which kind of sucked. It was like everything's going so good. Ooh. But each one I've also been able to like get so many jokes from, even the ulcerative colitis in general. If you look at my page, at least like I'd say 40% are poop jokes. And it's like, yeah, because that was like a large part of my life, but also because I find that finding humor in those things is like the best way to one, cope, and two, also, it's my way of sort of reaching out to other people who are struggling with it, if that makes sense. It's like, it's the best thing that I can do to like be a voice for it, I guess, which, yeah. So I've been able to. I remember when I first got my colon removed, I was very unhappy about it. I had a colostomy bag, I had a stoma. And what I was able to find humor in was naming my stoma Adolf Hitler, because I was like, he hates the Jew. And it was sort of like finding little jokes along the way, where even still, I have so many different terrible stories that like I want to make into stand-up, but I also don't want like overkill of just like, here's a colon joke again. But it does really help me both in getting new material and also sort of like coming to terms with harder stuff, making comedy out of it, I guess.
Well, I'll tell you, I've done almost 300 interviews at this point, and there's very few questions I haven't asked, but I guess this is going to be the first time that I ask about people's, I guess, digestive system. So where are you at? Where are you at with that now? Is it something you're still dealing with? And the only reason I ask that is just because, too, my mom actually, so I've never had to tell this before, but she, when I was growing up, she actually got colon cancer and had to have part of her colon
Really?
removed. So she had a colostomy bag for a few years, and they actually were able to reverse it because they told her, "Hey, this may make you have to go to the bathroom like six times a day. Are you sure?" And she's like, "Yes, whatever. I don't want to necessarily,
Yeah, the
I was
bag.
a middle." So where are you at with everything?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because I actually, the reason that I had four surgeries was because I guess two of the one of them was an emergency surgery, so it doesn't really count in the saga, but two of those were the reversal. So it's actually quite I like I feel like I learned so much science. But the first one, they removed my colon, like a magician's scarf. They did one of these. They actually do make a little tiny incision. But then the second one, they basically turned my small intestine, it's called a J pouch surgery. So they actually made it in the shape of a J, sewed it together, and then that sort of had to heal. And then the third surgery was connecting all the wires. So I basically got like a fake colon out of my own intestines, I guess. So I no longer have the colostomy bag. I got that removed the end of the summer this past year. So I had it for 8 months. And yeah, so no more bag, which is awesome. And yeah, there's definitely pros and cons to it. I got to like dress up the bag. They actually make colostomy bag covers so I could make it match my outfit, which was really fun. But I think I prefer no bag, probably.
Yeah, I was thinking about whether I was going to mention it or not, but you just said it, so I'll tell you. But she was, in her mid-30s at the time, not sure whether she was going to have to keep it, and kind of did a deep dive. They make like colostomy bag lingerie.
Oh, they totally do. They really, really
Yes.
do. I tried all of them, and then I even like started making some of my own bags, like the covers. Because I used to sew a lot. So that was really fun, actually. I'd get to choose like different fabrics. I had one that was like sequins. So that was probably the best part of it, was choosing the different covers, because there's a lot of options out there.
Yeah. So, but in the grand scheme of things, you don't miss it, right? You almost sound like you miss it. You almost miss it.
No, I do miss the fashion element of it. And I mean, there is like a uniqueness to it. Like, oh yeah, I poop in a bag. Like, it's kind of, I remember my favorite line to always use with it, whenever I'd explain it to people, was I'd always go like, I could be shitting right now. You and I both have no idea. Like, we mutually don't know, but it could be happening. You know, like there's something
That's
exciting to
true.
that. Dressing it up was fun. I also, in college once, almost, I stopped myself, but I still wish that I did, brought an unused one, but to an anything but a cup party, where there's certain, perks to it, I guess. Yeah, and it's also a good community of people. I met a lot of people who also had colostomy bags. I met one girl actually in the hospital who had the same surgery like 3 days before me, where it's a good community of people with colostomies.
Yeah, well, the last thing I'll say with this whole thing is, I guess, I don't know how many people are listening that are just on the brink of that surgery of getting their colostomy bag. But for those people, for that one person that's going to listen in 7 years, you've proven that, that's not something that's going to hinder you. Look how much things that you did after that. So just I guess kind of to talk to that person that, hey, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, when I had it, I actually was talking to a guy at a party who had ulcerative colitis and was like, yeah, it's been like a big discussion with me and my doctor, but I've been so scared of it. I was like, there's parts that suck, but like ultimately the bag saved my life. And also it saved me from, I was really, really sick. I was very, very like scary sick, where like the bag sucked, but it's also the removal of the colon is the only cure for ulcerative colitis. So I don't have ulcerative colitis anymore, which is epic. So I'm overall very grateful that it happened, even though it was not the best of times.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about your actual stand up. You started relatively recently, this past summer. That's a big step. That's a scary step for a lot of people. How did you make the decision that, hey, I'm gonna actually get up there and see whether other people think my jokes are funny?
Yeah, I've always been a huge fan of stand up. I've always like John Mulaney was like my main, like, oh, he's the coolest person to ever exist. And I've always had like a big admiration of it. But I at first actually, I took a class 3 years ago. I took a like 6 week summer session in stand up and did not feel like I was very good at it. I remember I got out of that class and I went, okay, well, I guess that's not my thing. And then I sort of came back into it. Because I was acting and looking for acting auditions, and an audition that came up was for Flappers, the comedy club, for a stand-up audition. They wanted a 2-minute set. And I don't know if I did it to like challenge myself, or I don't even know why, but I wrote a 2-minute set. I went in, I was terrified. I did the audition, and then they booked me. For actually a comedy contest was my first show, which I got advanced to the next level. I want a big bowl of fries, like the bit like biggest bowl they make of fries. But from there, I kind of just kept going with it and have been really enjoying it. So yeah, I sort of just fell into it almost accidentally.
And what now that you kind of dove into it, what's been the, I guess, the hardest, the most challenging part of all of it?
Oh, definitely just keeping up with it. I think my dad actually said this, which I thought was interesting, that when a singer or like a other type of performer goes on stage, the audience is looking for the greatest hits. Like if you saw Beyonce in concert and she's like, I'm gonna try some new stuff for you, you'd be like, like what do single ladies, Whereas for a comedian, you need new material all the time. Like you can't go on stage and go, oh, you want to hear one of the classics? You've seen this on Instagram. It's like everything has to be fresh. So I've been trying to challenge myself and come up with new material as often as I can. But I think just sort of the constant starting over again is hard.
Yeah. And something that I feel like would be hard. I literally kind of saw it in your postings where I watched you do pretty much the same 6-minute set two different times at two different places. One time, everything went amazing. I feel like everyone was having a great time. Other time, not as much. So how do you know whether, hey, these are not really funny and I need to work on them, or any of that audience wasn't so great? That I would struggle with that.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a hard element to it, where there's certain shows where I've walked in and it's sort of like you're walking to your death sentence because you see the other comics go up, you see that their material is good and the crowd, the energy is just off. There's a lot of different reasons the energy could be off, but the energy is just wrong. And you just still, I feel like it's, you got to just be confident in your material. I feel like a lot of my stuff, I'll test it a lot until I feel really good about it, to the point where a show like that will happen and I'm able to go, okay, that wasn't me. Like the energy was just off. I remember I actually saw at school at Hamilton, we used to have a lot of comedians come up and perform, which was awesome. But I remember one comedian came. It might have been Lucas Zelnick, and he was up there and he was saying like, oh, the energy is so off, like the vibes are off. And then someone just turned off the lights, like the lights were on in the crowd, and the energy instantly changed. And he even acknowledged it. He's like, oh, I guess like the lights were on. You know, where a lot of the time it's just elements that you wouldn't even think to notice that just make the atmosphere feel wrong, I guess.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I feel like comedy is something that everyone, I mean, the other thing that would be hard, I feel like, is you're talking about, like, the greatest hits. Everyone has that connection already, where you're definitely, when you're not the headliner yet, they don't necessarily know you as well yet. So rather than kind of already kind of built in with, oh yeah, I'm gonna love this, what they're thinking about is, how hard it was to get there, their bad day at work. So you gotta kind of bring everybody in. And unfortunately, what those early people are, and I feel like the reason that they have those first few comedians, is to try to warm up the crowd so the people actually want to laugh when the headliner gets there.
Yeah, I remember actually another comedian said to me once that the audience, it was actually that class that I took like 3 years ago. It was the teacher there who said the audience is like more scared than you. Like they really don't want to see someone bomb, which is why they're kind of like stiff at first and you need to warm them up because they're so nervous for you because they would never get up on that stage and do jokes. A lot of people find stand up really terrifying. So it's sort of you have to show that you're not afraid. It's weird. It's kind of like with like a wild animal where you got to show that you're not scared of it. It's a similar confidence, I guess.
Yeah, I've never really heard that before, but as somebody who goes to a lot of live comedy, I 100% feel that when people aren't doing well, it's not that I'm, it's always that, oh my God, I feel so bad right now.
Yeah, you're rooting for them. Like you
Yeah.
want stand up to succeed just as much as they want to succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask about how you craft these jokes, and I can already hear that, at least a lot of times I ask this question of, how much is rooted in your own reality, and a good chunk of it is. We've already talked about that, but how close do you feel like you need to stay to your reality? Some people say, hey, I am fine with taking, 1% of truth and just going crazy with it. And some people say, hey, I do a lot better when I can really stay with the truth and just add a little fringes to it. What's that look like for you?
Yeah, I think a lot of my comedy is storytelling. A lot of it is very based in that. I mean, it's just before doing any of this, like I've always been a writer was my main shtick. I went to college for creative writing. I wanted to just write. So a lot of it is based in sort of storytelling. But when it comes to sort of like the how real each story is, I try to keep each pretty real, but I will definitely, if there's a punchline that needs embellishing, I'm not afraid to do that. I remember it was my dad who actually told me about writing, since he's also a writer. One of his, he's actually a screenwriting teacher. So one of his things that he said he always told to students that was his biggest pet peeve was when someone would write something and he'd have a note about it, something that would like advance the story, and they'd go, "Oh no, this is autobiographical. You know, that's not what happened." And his whole thing that he said that I completely agree with is like, okay, but that doesn't make the story the best that it can be. You know, the audience doesn't know that it's autobiographical. All they know is that the story is not very good. You know, like, I guess whatever helps the joke be the best that it can be, although a lot of it is rooted in my own reality, I suppose.
Yeah. And given that, you know, these jokes that I've heard are already on YouTube, I'm going to ask you just a little bit about some of it. I guess the first thing that I've got to understand, and I say this kind of jokingly myself, is, you know, we talked about how comedians have to have a lot of hardship built in. You know, the people that have had the most crap happen to them a lot of times are the ones that are the funniest. You mentioned in your comedy about moving back and moving in with a friend and your nanny. That doesn't sound like you're at some point you were roughing it too much. You live with a nanny and a friend?
No. That one was just that was just a weird time, I guess. My parents were traveling, and I had a college friend who wanted to live in LA. My siblings, my sister moved out. My brother was in college, and then the childhood nanny part, she's I mean, she's not my childhood nanny anymore, or she's not my nanny anymore because I'm 22. But when me and my sister went to college, she moved into our house. So she just sort of she isn't anymore, but she was living here. So when my parents went, my siblings went, and my friend moved in, it did just end up in this sort of weird trio situation where it was me living at home with my childhood nanny and my buddy George.
Gotcha. Well, the last one I'm going to ask about to find the truth in is, did you really meet your boyfriend while being abroad?
Yeah, I did. I did actually meet him when I was abroad. The sort of abroad joke was actually a punch up from another comedian who I did a show, and he went, "Oh, you gotta make a broad joke." But I really did meet him my freshman year of college. I was in London, and I met him on Tinder, but British Tinder when I was there. And I'm actually moving there next month, so I am getting
Huh?
out of LA. But
Oh, that's awesome. Now, that's really cool. I was just listening to some comedians on a podcast not too long ago that talk about they were talking about really major comedians that are traveling all over the world, and they were saying that England and the UK have some of the best fans for comedy. They're normally punctual and they are there to laugh. So I assume you want to do comedy when you move.
Oh, totally. Yeah, there's a great comedy scene there, and that's actually 3 years ago when I took the stand-up class. It was in England, and I remember that the easiest was just jokes where it's like, "I'm an American," and all the British people are like, "Haha." So there's definitely a lot of paths there.
Like it. What you as someone who's kind of getting their start in comedy, what's the craziest place so far that you've had to perform?
Actually, last night I performed at a rehab facility. It was a great show, but I think that's so far been the most random. A lot of them are sort of random. I'm doing a show this week. It's a show, actually. All the comedians are over 30, except for me. Sort of just like, you find a spot wherever wants you. But all the shows have been a lot of fun. Every single time I get really nervous before, but then as soon as you're on stage, it's great.
Yeah, I feel like once you're not, you have no nerves, then maybe you're not going to be as good. I feel like those nerves help, you know. I've talked to a lot of comedians that are out there and been doing it for 20, 30 years, and they a lot of them mention, you know, I feel like I'm going to throw up every time before I get on stage. So I feel like that makes people better, honestly.
Yeah, every single time you sort of go to yourself, like, what am I doing? Like, what is this? But then, yeah, there's just a different feeling actually being on stage. I guess the sort of like hype up to it is the worst part.
Yeah, and you cover a lot of things. You're not really afraid to cover any topic. We've already talked about some of the topics that you cover, but what's one topic or one story that you've got in your head that you wish and you're still trying to figure out how to make a joke out of, how to make funny? You got
Oh, that's
anything?
a great question. Let me think. Let me. I have a list on my phone of stand-up ideas. Let me see if any of those. The answer is yes, that there is definitely something. Let's see. Oh, I actually know exactly the answer. I've been wanting so long. I've been wanting like 2 weeks to do a joke about the new Wicked movie, like a couple of jokes. But every time I sort of like go to do it, I just sort of it's not it's slightly too niche, where like I know that there's like 40% of the audience that has no idea what I'm talking about, which has sort of prevented me and has made it kind of hard. I've kind of resorted where I'm like, oh, I'll just make a TikTok about it. But that's one we're sort of trying to find a way to make it a joke for everyone, not just people who have seen Wicked, I guess. But I've been really trying on a Wicked joke, and it's very quickly losing relevance. So if I actually want to do it, I got to speed it up.
Yeah, I obviously, you know, I watched your reels and things, and that's why I reached out. But now that we were planning on talking, I've been kind of hyper aware of some of your content. I think the algorithm is hyper aware and bringing it all to me. So I saw that you made a wicked joke already on, what was it, Twitter or something. I liked it. I think you're on the right,
Thank
you're right
you.
track. Yeah.
Yeah, that was sort of the basis of it. That was the first time that I posted something that wasn't a reel. And it is weird with the algorithm. I've noticed like photos do my, I think all the apps are trying to become video platforms. But yes, yeah, that was a slow sort of soft launch of Wicked content.
I like it. Well, potentially more to come, potentially not. Is the longer we wait, like you said, you'll have to see.
Exactly. That's another hard part about the stand-up is sort of if I want to make a joke about certain things, they'll lose relevance, I guess. So anything pop culture, I gotta move on
Yeah.
with it.
Yeah. Are you know, you mentioned that you've done a lot of other things, or at least that you've done acting. Are you really kind of in that comedy lane now? Or are you still wanting to kind of dabble in both, or where are you at?
Yeah, I'd still like to dabble in both. And sort of all, there's a lot of different elements of entertainment that I want to explore. I still want to write. I still want to act. I still want to do stand up. I still want to do improv. I take a lot of classes at the Groundlings here in LA, so that's something that I want to continue to pursue. Yeah, just all elements of, I guess, entertainment I'm interested in. But right now, the focus has really been on stand-up, I think, because that's at current what has been coming most naturally to me, and has been like the most fulfilling to achieve.
Like, before we kind of start wrapping things up, we're going to play a second game. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. So this one, you've got a choice. I picked the first one, but this is the only time that ever listening to another episode would have mildly helped you, because I'm just going to tell you the name of the two games, and you're going to have to pick, and then I'll explain what they are. So the first game's called Podcast Realities. The second game is called Bravo, Your Picture is Being Framed. Which one do you want to play?
Ooh, and I get no info about either.
You will once you pick, yeah.
What was the name of the first one?
Podcast Realities.
Let's do the picture one.
All right. So Bravo, Your Picture is Being Framed. It's a segment that allows you to give props or praise to something that's happened recently in your life, whether the Walmart door greeter made you smile, whether your new shampoo is changing your life, maybe your aunt finally accepted your weird collection, just something that makes you happy at this exact moment. And we're framing their picture, we're putting it on the wall. They're the person of the month or thing of the month.
Ooh, that's fun. I gotta think. This is a random one, and I'm tempted to grab it, but it's all the way over there. They've started making these Nomad editions of books where they're like perfectly pocket size, and yet the font isn't small. And I got one, and I read it already.
Is it like this thick?
It's like it's this insane optical illusion almost. We're like, I want to get it. It's the page length is pretty much the same. The text is normal size, but everything else in the book is much smaller. And it's just like the perfect size book. When I was reading it, the actual book was fine, but when I was reading it, I would just like throw it in my bag and it weighs nothing. And I really want more of these Nomad editions to come out. I was just very excited to find it in the bookstore in the first place, but it's like this big.
I like it. Well, I'll tell you, Podcast Reality is about your overall surroundings, how we're talking to you as somebody who's all I can see is your face. So we won't play that, but what I'll ask you is, you keep saying you want to grab it. Are you chained to that chair? Are you unable to get up?
No, I can do it, but then I'd be like moving the computer, and it's a schlep. But it's right there. I'm looking at it.
You're teasing us, but that's all right. Everyone, you're gonna have to look up what these Nomad editions look like. Nomad edition.
It's like the perfect size that any book should be, and the font wasn't smaller. I really don't know how they did it. I looked up the like regular length of the book.
That's what I was gonna ask. Was it like abridged?
That's a good question. It might have been abridged, because I was gonna say, and it felt like I read it so fast. It might have been abridged.
I may have figured this out.
You may have figured this out. It was because there were a lot of parts where I was like, that happened really fast. It may have been abridged. But they're really cute little guys.
I like it. Well, that's all right. Sometimes that's all you need. You don't need to be them to explain things in detail over and over again. So I'm still into it, even if it's abridged. So let's now that we're done with all that, in wrapping things up, a question that if you haven't gotten a million times, I'm sure you will as you continue to do comedy, and that's, what advice do you have for others that want to get into comedy?
Yeah, I think the biggest advice is just start. That's always, I think, the hardest part is sort of the like build up to it. But yeah, as soon as you start, there's such a community, I think, too, of like comedians. Especially, for me specifically in LA, I found like so many friends through comedy, where it's just a lot of fun and it's a fun thing to try. And if it's something that you try and don't like, at least you know that. But I think there's really no other advice than just get started with it. I think it's one of those rare things that you can kind of just go to an open mic and you're doing it. So yeah.
I like it. How can people follow along, check out your comedy, all things Amanda Sadaka?
Yeah, I'm on a lot of the different platforms. Instagram is Amanda Sadaka Comedy, just Amanda Sadaka everywhere else. And yeah, I'll post on Instagram's probably the best one to find me because I'll post clips as well as upcoming shows. But yeah, I post on there somewhat frequently, trying to get better at it.
Yeah. Well, I really, really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
Absolutely.
So that was Amanda Sadaka. Great conversation. Really, really happy that she decided to join me. I love talking to comedians. I love learning about the world of comedy. I feel like stand up would be such a cool thing to do, but such a I guess you got to really have confidence in yourself to get up there and, you know, giving a speech is one thing, but getting up there and wanting to make people laugh is another. And I really look at that in high regard, and I really appreciate Amanda coming on and sharing a little bit about her journey. It's definitely been an interesting journey with some highs and lows, but I think that she's made it all at least as enjoyable as possible and been able to laugh along the way. Great conversation. I urge you to check out all of her comedy that's online. Go check her out if she's coming to a city near you. All the links to her information will be in the show notes. The links to this podcast will be in the show note as well. Of course, the Instagram, the TikTok, the Facebook, the YouTube now, like I mentioned in the beginning, there's a YouTube channel. Don't leave me on, you know, a couple views and a couple subscribers. You know, it's just starting out, so it's pretty fresh at the moment. But happy to have put it on YouTube finally after a lot of people have mentioned that I should. Apparently, like 50% of podcasts are listened to on YouTube now. I just didn't know whether I should do that when I'm not putting the video, but if that's something that you preferred on YouTube, you definitely there's a graphic, just not the video. Maybe one day, you know, of course we have the video on when I talk to people, so maybe one day that video will come, but we'll dabble in what we're doing now. But thanks so much for listening. Amanda, thank you for being here. We'll catch y'all next week. Take it away, Chris.
This has been Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff. Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us next time where we will interview another amazing guest who is sure to make you laugh or make you think, or hey, maybe even both. But until then, keep being awesome.